Welcome to Ghost Bites here on Nova 103.5. I'm Gary Struble. Every week I have the pleasure and the privilege to talk to the finance ghost who, by way of his ghosty ways, has knows ways of knowing things. Mostly he reads all the documents, so you don't have to, and he gives us his views on what is going on. Ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's perhaps start off with an interesting story, and that's the story of Curo, a private education operator. They also have schools here in Namibia. And it was a dream for Curo for a while. They were a darling of the stock exchange. And then they fell off a cliff. Are they climbing their way back?
Thanks, Gary. Yes, I suppose my ghostly ways could be defined as reading all the documents. I did enjoy that. It's also really accurate because that's all there really is to it. Anyway, the documents for Curo are pretty interesting because, yeah, you know, as you've alluded to, they're big promises, big dreams at one point. Go and draw a Curo share price going back to like 2015, 2016, if you want to see what a bubble looks like. Everyone was very excited about the failure of government schools and how Curo would fill that gap and just absolutely print cash. Look, they've built a good business, but it obviously didn't turn out nearly as good as people thought it was going to for a number of reasons. Stuff like middle-class immigration is one of the issues, and maybe just competition among schools is another. I think the birth rate might also have something to do with it because people are having fewer children than they had in years before, I think even in a place like South Africa. So that would impact demand for schools as well. The problem with schools is that they make all their profit from the last few kids in the class. It's very much like airline economics. So if you don't actually get a school to the capacity that you're hoping, it really, really impacts the amount of money you can actually make from it. Interestingly enough, for the 6 months to June, headline earnings per share is expected to be between 10.9% and 21.3% higher. So they just sneak above that potential 20% increase, which then triggered a trading statement. What's really interesting, though, is to actually go back and compare that to sort of pre-pandemic levels, because it sounds like great growth year on year, but if you actually go and look, they've only just made it back now to 2020 levels. They are still way off 2019 levels. COVID was really tough for the schools for a number of reasons, and they also had to go and issue a whole lot of new shares to actually get them through it. So on a per share basis, clawing back those earnings is a long and arduous journey. And that's why the share price is still down, you know, more than 40% over 5 years. So, yeah, people assume that things like schools are just a license to make money, but they aren't necessarily.
There was also some news this week about a story we've been following, and that's, of course, Pick and Pay's rights offer. They wanted 4 billion rand in recapitalization after a couple of disastrous years, some poor decision-making and some perhaps competitors outmaneuvering them. But it seems as if the plan is starting to come together for Pick and Pay. Tell us a little bit about how that's gone.
Yes, it did go to plan for Pick and Pay, but I'll tell you it absolutely went to plan for Pick and Pay's underwriters. So the banks who actually underwrote this capital raise really didn't want to own the shares. They had no real interest in owning the shares. I think they just needed to show support to the capital raise because obviously banks have extensive exposure to Pick and Pay in lots and lots of other ways. I mean, just imagine the credit card fees, the cash handling fees, you know, any debt on the balance sheet and other stuff like indirect exposure. Think about all the property funds that have Pick and Pay as a tenant. So for the banking industry, Pick and Pay needs to continue. And I suspect that was a big part of why the banks actually stepped in and underwrote this capital raise. They earn a fee for that, of course, which is sort of the compensation they get for being willing to take on the shares. But the banks were the absolute winners here because the rights offer was heavily, heavily oversubscribed. And that was by design. They used all the structuring tricks in the book to achieve that outcome. It was a heavily discounted rights offer, and they allowed excess applications. So what that means is if you hold shares in Pick and Pay, you'll get your pro rata share in the rights offer. But if excess applications are allowed, you can actually say, as the name suggests, hey, I actually want more shares at this price. You know, here's my form. Please let me know if I can get all of them. When you have an underwriter who wants the shares, and you often see this in the case of a, you know, Christo Visser type underwrite, but there are lots of other examples, and it's not always the case either when you get these underwriters, but you'll sometimes see a situation where excess applications are not allowed, and that's because the underwriter really wants the shares. Now, what is interesting about Pick and Pay is that the excess applications were actually more than the total number of shares being offered. So it was very, very oversubscribed at the price. And that I was a little bit surprised by. I did think that they would get it all away without the underwriters needing to take up shares. But that level of support from the market was a bit of a surprise for me. Now, obviously, that doesn't just mean retail investors. It means institutions as well, many of whom are kind of in so deep that they actually just have to help Pick n Pay get out of it in the hope of minimizing the losses over time. So, yes, they managed to get what they wanted in terms of Pick n Pay and certainly the banks. But now the hard work starts, and they really do have hard work ahead of them because, you know, it's a very competitive environment out there, as we know.
Let's turn our attention to telecoms and some numbers out for Telkom. That's Telkom South Africa. Here in Namibia, Telkom South Africa operate through a couple of subsidiaries, one of them BCX, for example. The numbers don't look particularly good for BCX, but there are some pretty good numbers in there. And we have seen EBITDA in the first quarter of 2024 grow by 24% across the group. Those are some strong numbers for Telkom.
Telkom is one of those really old names on the JSE where people seem to actually want it to work. And yet when things are starting to work, the share price kind of just ignores it. It's a very, very odd share price chart because you would expect that, you know, the magical disappearance of load shedding, as well as all the excitement around the GNU, would have really helped the Telkom share price. So this is a very typical SA Inc. kind of stock, notwithstanding, you know, operations in Namibia, etc. And yet, if you go and have a look at that share price, it's actually just trended lower for the last few months, which is a little bit strange for me. So those who enjoy a bit of a contrarian or value type play might want to go and dig around Telkom a little bit, because the numbers in the latest quarter are interesting. Now, they really do go to great lengths to tell you to not extrapolate that 24% EBITDA growth for a full year, because the Q1 base, in other words, last year's Q1, was really weak. So it was easier to grow against that base than it will be for the rest of the year. Revenue growth only 3.9%. So maybe that indicates that, you know, people mustn't get too excited here. And as you say, there are parts of the group that are struggling, like BCX, for example. The Telkom story is really one of just being on a treadmill of technology where much of their legacy business is just falling away, and they are trying quite hard to build out what they call, you know, next generation revenue, which is actually just last generation revenue as opposed to dinosaur revenue. You know, these guys are not doing artificial intelligence and crazy stuff. They're actually just doing things like Telkom Mobile and fiber. But when your whole business was built around the good old home telephone, you know, that does look quite exotic. So Telkom is at least on the way up in terms of earnings, and they're making progress elsewhere, like the disposal of SwiftNet, which is sitting with the Competition Tribunal for final approval. They seem to be enjoying quite good support in the local debt capital markets, and yet that share price just kind of keeps washing away. Generally speaking, I'm bearish on telecoms. It's just not a very appealing industry for me. It suffers from margin squeeze over time and all kinds of other issues, but Telkom is very volatile, and for swing traders, might be worth a look, because earlier this year, it was trading vastly higher than it is right now.
Another business I enjoy watching, because it gives us a sense of a business that has managed to bridge two different economies, and that's the paper and the plastic economy, and more specifically around packaging. And we all know there's many more products on the shelves now than there were 10 years ago, so more packaging is required, and as markets grow, so packaging must change and adapt as well. They've put out some numbers, and it is a little bit of a mixed bag of results for Impact. They've also got a number of corporate actions on the go at the moment. Tell us a little bit about what you see in those numbers.
Impact is a really great example of operating leverage, which is really just a way of describing business models that have high fixed costs and usually extensive investment in things like the manufacturing base and factories and all that kind of stuff. Basically, what happens in these businesses is when volumes are strong, they do really, really well because they are actually achieving full capacity utilization of the infrastructure that they've built. It's a bit like Kiro, actually. That's also very much a high operating leverage kind of model. But when volumes are down, it means you're not absorbing overheads per unit at the rate you are supposed to. And so all of your margins just come under a lot of pressure. Just logically, if you owned a factory and the thing was only running at like 30% capacity, it's going to do really badly compared to running at 80% capacity. Now, that's an extreme example, but we see this playing out in some of the listed companies to a lesser extent. Now, at Impact, the paper business is having a tough time at the moment. They are struggling with lower volumes, and therefore operating profit has gone, you know, the wrong way. Revenue from continuing operations down 1.1%. That doesn't sound too bad. And yet the move in operating profit is significantly bigger than that. Group underlying operating profit down 20.4%. So such a small move in revenue and yet such a large move in operating profits. That is the textbook example of how operating leverage actually works. Now, if we look a little bit deeper, as I said, paper manufacturing, that's the challenge. Revenue down 3.3% in paper and underlying operating profit down 27.6%. So that's where much of the pain came from. Plastics business, though, don't ignore that one as a challenge as well, because although revenue was up 10.6%, which sounds really good, operating profit was actually only flat year on year. So they haven't seen the benefits there of operating leverage. And the plastics industry is not a straightforward place to play at all. Unfortunately, net debt has also increased significantly as well, which means the net finance costs are up. So on the whole, not a great interim period at all for Impact. It's still a very profitable business and they are still paying a dividend, albeit 33.3% lower than the year before. But obviously what will make a difference here is if the paper side of the business can get its volumes up. And much of that is outside of Impact's control. This is another good example as well of what happens when you buy a business that is very exposed to external factors. Unfortunately, earnings can be and tend to be very cyclical, very volatile, and you've got to be prepared to hold through these cycles rather than panic.
All right, guys, we'll let you go. Thanks so much. Always great to hear your thoughts and views on some of the biggest companies here in Southern Africa affecting not only what happens on the JSE, but also here in Namibia as well. We'll be back next week with the Finance Ghosts as we check out what's happening in the markets here in Southern Africa on Ghost Biz on the Business Report.